Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
We're talking about my old Kentucky home, actually Anthony Davis's and Terrence Jones's, on this episode of Locked On Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson. Oh, that takes me back. The University of Kentucky fight song reminding me of my old days. These are my new days. I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate, and this is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And today we are taking a little bit of a step back in time, both for me and for a couple of Pelicans players. We're going to talk a little bit about Anthony Davis and Terrence Jones and Kentucky basketball and how it relates to the Pelicans, how it relates to the NBA. A lot of you guys know I used to cover Kentucky. And we won't dwell on that on the podcast a whole bunch, but there are times when those old days are relevant, and today is one of those times as the Pelicans prepare to sign Terrence Jones, who played with Anthony Davis at Kentucky, who won a national championship in New Orleans, of all places. So we're going to talk about that through a very Pelicans prism. This isn't a University of Kentucky podcast today, but we are going to talk about Kentucky a lot, and we're going to talk about it with Kyle Tucker from SECCountry.com, which is a new website, a joint venture of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and Cox Communications that, as the name indicates, covers the Southeastern Conference. Kyle is there. SEC football columnist and their Kentucky basketball beat writer. And he used to work at the Courier Journal, where I used to work. He replaced me at the Courier Journal when I went to Yahoo Sports and Rivals.com. We're going to talk to Kyle about that season that Anthony Davis and Terrence Jones played together, about that championship, about the way those guys played together, and a little bit about Kentucky as what my friend Sekou Smith calls the 31st team in the NBA. We'll talk a little bit of Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns, which I think is going to be a hot discussion topic this preseason. And we're going to do all that again through very much a prism of talking about the Pelicans and the current NBA. I want to get a little bit to the news of the day, except there's not a lot. And I want to tell you a little bit about the weirdness of recording this podcast. Kyle and I had a little bit of trouble getting connected, and so the podcast is a little later in the day than I wanted it to be, but at the time I record it, there hasn't been any real Pelicans news today, and there's a chance that there will be. So by the time you hear this, there's a chance that the Pelicans will have announced some signings. They've got, obviously, four free agents committed and none of them signed yet, technically. But I expect that any day now, whether it's today, tomorrow, sometime this week, I think we're going to get those guys announcements of their signings. And then at some point, probably have an opportunity to talk to those guys. I don't think that will come today, even if the signings do. And Terrence Jones, who we're going to talk about a lot here in the next couple of podcasts, may or may not be announced at the same time as some of the other guys. Solomon Hill, Etuan Moore, and Langston Galloway, because I was told it may take a little while to work out the numbers on Terrence Jones. They're still trying to max out whatever they can give him, maybe a little bit above the league minimum. So we're going to see how that turns out. It could take a little longer, or it could be at the same time. I think it's still kind of up in the air. And the way these things have gone with the Pelicans, it might not be today, and it might not be Wednesday. It might take a couple of days, but I think any day now that's going to happen. At the time I record this, it hasn't happened, and that, frankly, is not going to be big enough news for me to re-record the podcast or record a special edition or whatever, a bonus episode like I did when Terrence Jones committed. Because that was big news. The signings will not be big news. We know who's going to sign. We know basically what the money is going to be on all these signings. And so if it happens after the fact, you'll find out from somewhere, possibly by, you know, looking at my Twitter account, at @BDawsonWrites, or looking at theadvocate.com. So we're going to talk to Kyle. Before we do, a couple of reminders. One of those reminders I've already kind of plugged, theadvocate.com. Want to remind you, as always, to check that out. It's the place to get all my Pelicans coverage, as well as coverage from Scott Kushner and our columnist Rod Walker. A great place, as we get closer to the start of the NFL season and the college football season to get updates on the Saints and LSU. So make sure to check out all of that at theadvocate.com. I also want to get you aware and get you a little bit excited for Locked On Saints, which is coming from Nick Underhill, who covers the Saints for The Advocate, and Joel Erickson, who also covers the Saints. Nick has had a podcast in the past. It is transitioning over to the Locked On Podcast Network. That'll be a daily podcast in the season. Tons of updates on the Saints. Make sure when that is out, and I will let you know when it's out, that you subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, please subscribe to us and on iTunes and leave a review, a 5-star review if you think we merit that. And leave a review in addition to a rating if you get a chance. It really helps us out, helps us move up some lists. It's very valuable to me if you both subscribe and give us a rating, and I greatly, greatly appreciate that. So with all that said, let's get into this episode. As I said, we're going to talk some Kentucky basketball as it relates to the Pelicans and the NBA. We're going to talk some Terrence Jones. We're going to talk some Anthony Davis. We're going to take a look back at some of his development, and we're going to do all of that with Kyle Tucker. All right, so Kyle Tucker joins us. We've had a few technical difficulties. We're ironing through those things. Kyle, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
So, you know, you were covering Virginia Tech before you started covering Kentucky for the Courier-Journal after I left, as I explained to people. And you had seen, obviously, NFL talent at Virginia Tech, not a ton of NBA talent, obviously. And I wonder if you kind of remember those first days when we got to go in and watch practice and your first look at that championship Kentucky team, and specifically, I guess, your first look at Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, having seen several NFL players at a mostly football program at Virginia Tech, Malcolm Delaney, who just finally came out of the European leagues all these years later to get an NBA contract, was really the best you know, player that I covered every day, I guess I would say. I saw a lot of good players in the ACC, but I remember, sitting there with you the first time we got to see a practice, an open practice in the preseason before that 11-12 season. And, yeah, I mean, even being sort of a football guy, you could recognize right away that they had some special players on that team, that Davis and Kit Gilchrist and, you know, Lamb and Terrence Jones coming back were really, really elite-level players, and it looked like they had something special, I think, right out of the gate. But even so, I would say the guy that we saw in Anthony Davis at the beginning of that year didn't even really resemble the guy that we saw by the end of that year. That was what was so remarkable to me, was he really did get better and better and better and better. Seemingly every week over the course of that season, and added more and more to his game. Calipari trusted him to do more and more in his game, to the point that, you know, by the time they made their run to the national championship, from game to game, he could hit, you know, deep jumpers and, you know, then not make a shot and still impact the national championship game like nobody else.
Yeah, he. We forget that when we first saw him, he was a relatively new big guy. You know, everybody knows about the growth spurt. We won't bore people with growth spurt details. But he had not been a big guy very long, and he was not a very polished big guy. And you actually wrote a story this year, and I know because I asked Anthony Davis some questions for you about it, about Kenny Payne, the Kentucky assistant, and some of the part that he played in that development. Because he did not have – he came to Kentucky really as a guy who wanted to play kind of like Kevin Durant, come off screens and have the ball in his hands. And they really taught him – from the inside out. He learned a lot about how to play the post at Kentucky.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, you know, sort of spinning it forward, that maybe that experience, and also the experience with Carl Towns and the way that Payne and that staff were able to develop them in the post sort of led indirectly or directly to, I think, what most would say was a bit of a mismanagement of Scal this year at Kentucky, because Calipari has since said, you know, I tried to use the Anthony Davis template and the Carl Anthony Towns template. They were similar guys that they wanted to play away from the basket. Carl Towns shot threes all the time when he was in high school, and Calipari just sort of forced post play down his throat. And you know, as Anthony Davis was a guard until he had the huge growth spurt. So it was really only, you know, 2 years into being a post player, and really wasn't a real post player when he got there, and they sort of forced that down his throat. And both of those guys took to it, and their game really took off, and Scal just didn't. And maybe he will down the road, but he did not in his 1 year at Kentucky. So that's sort of interesting, too, you know, that the way it worked so well for Anthony Davis and then later Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, led them to try to use that exact same blueprint with a guy who seemed so similar, and his career, obviously, to this point, has gone much different.
You know, I don't remember the team. They played in some tournament in Connecticut at a casino. Remember, like, the Mohegan Sun,
yeah.
And I don't remember who they played, yeah. But basically they played this team that said, okay, we're just going to put a body on Anthony Davis where he can't catch a lob. That's the only thing we're going to stop him from doing. And he basically didn't score. He couldn't do anything but that. At that early
stage
of their
offense. Was that Old Dominion? I think they played Old Dominion in South Florida.
I think it was Old Dominion. It was whichever team kind of played them closer, I believe.
Yeah, I think Old Dominion sort of uglied up that game. And, yeah, I think that's right. I think he blocked some shots, but offensively was sort of a non-factor.
You may not have heard about this. I don't know if anybody's ever told you, but on that championship team that Kentucky had, he took the fourth most shots on the team, Anthony Davis.
Yeah, no, you know, that is a lightly reported fact that I feel like John Calipari really ought to use more sort of in his sales pitch about the program, because I feel like he just really neglects that. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist also should be noted, I think I'm breaking this story, took the fifth most shots on that team.
That is shocking. Those guys did shockingly well in the draft, given those statistics. You would think that would be something that John Calipari would mention in every other breath, which he kind of does. The interesting thing about – do you know who the three guys were who took more shots than Anthony Davis?
I would assume certainly Deron Lamb, Marcus Teague, and I want to say Terrence Jones, but I'm thinking maybe it was Darius Miller.
It actually was Terrence Jones. Terrence Jones was second. Deron Lamb was first. Marcus Teague was third. After the first five, there's a pretty big drop-off to Darius Miller. Although all those guys were over 300 and nobody else was even close to that. That year, Anthony Davis, I think it's somewhat significant as we're talking a lot about Kentucky on this episode of the podcast, but we're doing it through sort of a prism of the Pelicans and how it impacts the Pelicans. What's interesting looking back at that team is Anthony Davis played center for that team. And you know, you can say positions are interchangeable and there's positionless basketball and all that sort of stuff. But effectively, he was the center and Terrence Jones was the power forward. And those guys worked really well together. I mean, you know, Jones had a very good year. It wasn't an Anthony Davis year. But those guys worked well together. And I think part of the thing was that Jones is like a physical guy. He does some things in terms of banging around with people that you really don't want Anthony Davis doing. And it works if you want to play one of those guys at power forward and one at center. And even you can interchange who they defend a little bit. I remember that working very well, obviously, and those guys had a pretty nice chemistry that I think, you know, I think the hope here is that that's going to translate over to the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see how it'll play out. I think those guys obviously are probably pretty excited about getting back together. It would have been interesting if Darius Miller could have hung on. I know that Anthony Davis brought him down there when he started his career in New Orleans, but and I think he's had a pretty nice European career as well. But yeah, I mean, Terrence Jones, you could argue, was the second best player on that team. You know, I mean, obviously Kidd-Gilchrist was the heart of that team, but in terms of actual skill, I mean, you know, ready to play in the NBA, I think maybe Terrence Jones was a little further along. And been interesting to sort of see how their careers have gone. I thought he was really going to take off there when he started to kind of get on a roll in Houston. But, you know, he can play. He as many pieces as the Pelicans need, I think it's certainly he's not a bad one to add. And I think anybody that Anthony Davis is comfortable with and has any sort of rapport with and might enjoy playing with, I think that's a good move for them.
Yeah, and shares an agent with. That's
also
notable. Hey, about that team, you mentioned this about Terrence Jones. I thought there was a time when Terrence Jones, it very much looked like he was going to be the second best pro on that team. And some of that is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist has had such a hard time staying on the floor. Interestingly, that team had virtually no injuries on the way of that national championship that they won here in New Orleans. And those guys have had a fit staying healthy in the NBA. Jones has had injuries. Anthony Davis has had well-documented injuries. Kidd-Gilchrist missed almost all of this past season. It's kind of weird. Is there anything about that group, either those guys or guys that didn't make it, that, you know, from an NBA perspective, that surprises you about that Kentucky team looking back?
Well, not surprises me. I think that probably most interesting guy from that team was Marcus Teague, and just because he and Dakari Johnson, but probably he more than any, even more so than Dakari Johnson, but they're the two guys that really stand out in the John Calipari era at Kentucky that should have come back. Had they come back, would have almost certainly been higher draft picks the next year. And had they come back, would have really been the missing piece to the next year's team, you know, after the championship season. I think Calipari always expected Marcus Teague to come back. And when he didn't, he was left with Ryan Harrow, who turned out to be a total disaster. And I don't think he ever expected Harrow, when he took him as a transfer, to be the guy. You know, that really crippled that next year's team. And while he went late in the first round, I think had he come back that next year in what was a really weak draft, and been a star at Kentucky, which I think he would have been, I think their fortune would have been a lot different. I think his fortune would have been a lot different. It doesn't surprise me that he didn't necessarily stick. And, you know, I went down and did, coincidentally, Teague and then Dakari Johnson, who was on the almost undefeated team and then decided to turn pro, probably ill-advised. They ended up on the same D-League team, the Thunder's D-League team, and I went out and did a story on Dakari and talked to Marcus during that time, and I talked to the coach there, who was actually an assistant coach at Florida under Billy Donovan for while Teague was a college player, and he said the biggest thing that hurt Teague was that he came out and ended up spending 2 years in the NBA for 2 years, 2.5 years, but he was on the end of the bench and getting no minutes and thus no development, and it just really stunted his career, and I don't think he's ever really been able to recover from that. So not a surprise, I guess, with Teague, but just probably the most interesting guy that didn't really make it from that group.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be a more effective NBA player because he seemed so efficient running a pick and roll in college. And as it turns out, I think if you look back at that team, and I've watched a little bit of film in the years since it happened, Deron Lamb also looks kind of good running a pick and roll. And the trick is they have the greatest pick and roll forward in the history of college basketball, probably in Anthony Davis.
It turns out the guy you're giving it to or are playing off of in that makes a difference. Yeah, I think Anthony Davis made everybody on that team look better. Although, you know, Deron Lamb, I think percentage-wise, is the all-time three-point leader at Kentucky. And so the fact that he didn't stick, I think probably the fact that he didn't stick was less related to his talent and more related to his focus. But, you know, that's a story for another podcast, probably.
Yeah. I think that's probably true. Of the guys that you have seen there, and you're still covering Kentucky, you covered them last season, which is the first year of the Calipari era that I didn't this past season. Who's the best college player out of that bunch?
From last year's team?
No, from the time you started covering Kentucky. So starting with that 11-12, they've had so many guys go on to the NBA. Which of those guys is the best college player in your mind?
So you're trying to get me to name one, to choose between Carl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis and start a huge debate, I guess.
I am going to ask you that question, but I'm first just asking you, just because there might be a guy I'm not thinking of who would be ahead of those guys, although I can't imagine who it would be.
No, yeah, I mean, I think it's down to those two. But I mean, as a you're saying as a college player. So as a college player, I don't really think it's disputable that it's Anthony Davis. I mean, he won everything you could win. That was such an incredible run for him. He wins, you know, obviously all the SEC awards, National Player of the Year, Freshman of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, set the NCAA freshman mark for block shots, wins a gold medal with the Olympic team. Is the first overall draft pick. And then did he or did he not? He did not win NBA Rookie of the Year because I guess Carl Towns was incredibly Kentucky's first.
He did not. He missed a lot of time that year, and Damian Lillard won Rookie of the Year.
So I guess that was the only – that was like his first failure to win the highest possible honor available to him in about a year, you know, year span.
Yeah, he was also most outstanding player at the Final Four, I think.
Mm. Correct, yes. Like we talked about earlier – really, an all-time kind of weird and awesome game by him in the national championship game, where I think he had 6 points and couldn't buy a shot. And I think Calipari tells a story at halftime. He said, "Well, you guys take care of the scoring; I'll take care of the rest." And he really did everything else: blocks, steals. You know, went flying over my head on press row, off the court for a loose ball, was everywhere, grabbing rebounds. helping other guys get involved offensively. He did everything else, affected the game in every possible way, and dominated the game without really being able to score.
Yeah, it's he had a fantastic year, and he had a great Final Four because that game was all about the other things he did, and he had scored against Louisville. He put up big numbers and, you know, was really into that game. It was I said during that year, and our friend Adam Himmelsbach, who now covers the Celtics for the Boston Globe, will attest to this because he has constantly given me credit for it, that there would be a window of time where he was the best player on the planet, where he was the best basketball player alive. I now don't know if that window's ever going to happen because as good as he's been, there's just so many great players, and LeBron's window still looks open, and Steph Curry's was not one that I saw coming. But he was awfully close the year before this. He was awfully close to the best player playing basketball. And I think we saw something coming, and maybe not this soon. I think he's better now than I thought he was going to be right now.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see, if he can stay healthy and sort of peak again, and where those other superstars are in relation to him. And I assume you said you're going to get to this later, but I wonder the same thing about Karl-Anthony Towns, if there won't be a window where he's the best player in the world, because it all seems out in front of him right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about him. I think it is obvious to me that Davis had the best college season of all those one-and-done guys. John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins were before your time, and those guys would be up there. But Davis, you look at the hardware. And the other thing is that Karl-Anthony Towns, by comparison, took him even a little longer to get going. And that team had it had a lot of sophomores who were good players. They just had a little bit more – it was probably a little bit more balanced in terms of just – especially when the year started – how good all those guys were. I don't think Towns was like head and shoulders above everybody else. That happened by the end of the year. It just took him a little bit longer. It took them a little longer, I think, to understand exactly what he was. I remember there was a time, like December of his freshman year, where I thought, man, I don't know if I'd want to spend a top three pick on this guy because I thought he was a little soft. I did not see it coming. And then like around January and February, it happened.
Yeah, I can remember you and I having discussions about that. I don't know. He's not as good as I thought he was. And like you said, he really took off, and there were games he totally dominated. I mean, the Notre Dame game in the Elite Eight, that where it almost ended before that undefeated team even got to the Final Four, they just decided to put it on his shoulders, and they threw it to him every time down, and he could not be stopped. And then it went from Okafor as the clear number one pick to, it became almost fully, totally obvious, to everyone, by the end of that year that, it's Towns. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. And then he just continued, it's kind of like, it's a little bit different timetable because with Davis, it was literally, I think every week from the moment he stepped on campus, he got better. About that halfway point of that season all the way through now, Karl-Anthony Towns has just gotten better and better and better. And, his rookie season continued to get better to the point that he was a runaway rookie of the year. And he can do just about everything, it seems like. And he's such a perfect face of a franchise. He says all the right things. He's such a commercially valuable guy that I can only imagine how his endorsement deals are going to skyrocket if he continues to play well. And he's just super versatile. He's a great defensive big guy. He's can step out and shoot NBA threes. I think at some point he'll be really, really good at that. And so I don't know. I don't know how far he can go. We've talked so much about Anthony Davis. So much of it hinges on what kind of injury breaks does he get over the course of his career, though.
Yeah, last year, the NBA at the beginning of every season, there's a general manager's poll, and one of the questions in that poll is, who's the guy you would take if you're starting a franchise today? Who's the NBA player you would take to start your franchise? And last fall, 86% of those people chose Anthony Davis.
That's amazing.
That number is not going to be the same this year, and I don't know that he'll even win the question in the poll. I'm not sure he'll even be the guy most answered. Steph Curry is going to get some answers there. There's going to be some people who say Steph Curry who didn't say it last year because he's still relatively young, and they've added Kevin Durant, and he's going to have a prolonged career. He's going to have a long, a lot of success for years coming forward. But because of the age thing, I think it's going to come down in most people's minds still to Anthony Davis and Karl-Anthony Towns. And this time last year, that was a ridiculous notion. Even in December, it was a ridiculous question to ask which of those guys you'd rather have. And by the end of the season, it's a less ridiculous question. I mean, it's a question that I think is going to kind of dominate the comparison thing. There's always some comparisons happening. You know, there were LeBron and Kobe and that kind of stuff. And those two guys are going to be a big comparison topic, I think, going forward. It's going to be, if you had to start today, who are you starting with? Anthony Davis or Karl-Anthony Towns? So I'll ask you that question. Who would you start with?
I'll say Karl-Anthony Towns, not necessarily because of the play yet, but because he doesn't have any injuries, none. And I'll always take the – at this point, we've talked – I think you and I have had to talk a lot in terms of just, like, drafting teams. You know, I would just honestly, I think, be a hard and fast rule, as tempting as it might be. I would just never draft a big man with any history of injury, especially not anything below his, you know, knees. So, you know, because Anthony Davis has had multiple issues with injuries now, and Karl-Anthony Towns has not, and they are, you know, on similarly steeply upward trends, you know, in terms of growing as players, I think I'd have to go with Karl-Anthony Towns. And, yeah, like you said before, a year ago I would have thought that was an absolutely absurd thing to say, but Towns is going through the roof. And he's healthy.
Yeah, it's really that is a really difficult thing because for me, I've gotten to see Davis up close, you know, both in college and now. And I did not get to see his best NBA season, although I watched a ton of Pelicans games that year. I was still covering Kentucky. I got to see his second best season, and it was still a really good year. And you look at all the things he can do, and you look at, you know, he's expanding his game all the time. And you look at what he's accomplished, like he's put up two really great seasons, a historically great season the year before this. And so it's hard to say, like, I'm going to take this 19 or 20-year-old kid over this 23-year-old who just turned 23 and has done all this. But I think it is awfully tempting to pick Karl-Anthony Towns, not only because of what you said, the injury situation, but he's younger. For one, I mean, you know, it's a significant, it's only 3 years difference, but it's a difference. And going forward, and we'll see, I could be totally wrong. People remind me all the time, Steph Curry seemed like a guy who was never going to stay healthy, and now he has stayed pretty healthy.
Right,
But going forward, Karl Towns has the kind of body that makes you think he can withstand some of the things in the NBA that maybe Anthony Davis has not been so great at withstanding.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting too to just sort of see his body change over time. When we first sort of became aware of him, when John Calipari, the forward-thinking recruiting genius that he is, decided to coach the Dominican Republic national team, I'm sure with no knowledge of the fact that there was this 15-year-old Karl-Anthony Towns who we could actually coach every day, bring onto campus for multiple weeks, and talk openly to reporters about within the rules because he was coaching him on a national team. I'm sure he didn't think of any of that. But when we kind of first became aware
of his heart, the goodness of his heart.
Yes. He really loved the Dominican Republic. He had such a longstanding connection to that nation and their basketball program. But, you know, I mean, that was a genius move and it worked out obviously. But when that's when we sort of first became real aware of Karl-Anthony Towns. He was a super skinny kid. And then, over the course of his high school career, he became sort of a pudgy kid. And then he got to Kentucky, and his body started leaning out and becoming more, you know, thick and muscular. And it's continued to develop in the NBA, where now he's just, you know, as young as he is, he's really a full grown man physically. And yeah, he looks like a guy who's built to play against some, you know, tough, aggressive, physical big men. And that's another thing when you talk about Kenny Payne. The story I wrote earlier this year about him as sort of Kentucky's post whisperer. He really toughens those guys up, certainly if they're willing to be toughened up. It didn't work out great for Scal, although I think he got tougher over the course of the year. Towns really took to it, and he was a guy who didn't seem initially like he was going to. He didn't want to get down there and bang, but you know, they put him through some pretty brutal workouts and practices and tried to beat him up and make him fight back. And when we talk about the way he took off at the end of the year, when he finally sort of realized it and took to it, kind of what he could do with his body if he decided to be the aggressor. That's when his season and I think career took off. And because he's built that way, both physically and mentally, I think he's set up well to withstand some of the rigors, I think.
Those guys, and you know a little bit about this, those guys, it matters to them when they play each other. I saw that from a lot of guys. In fact, Brett Brown, the 76ers coach, came in here and at the pregame shoot-around was talking about the fact that, like, Nerlens Noel would probably play better than normal because he would be fired up to play against Anthony Davis. Davis and DeMarcus Cousins care about it. And I think it was very clear watching them play against each other that Davis and Karl Anthony Towns care about it. You know, those guys stay connected, and I think there's a camaraderie, but there's also a fair bit of trash talk. I think those guys all want to beat each other.
Yeah, and on draft day this year, when in yet another sort of Calipari PR stroke of genius, he somehow commandeered ESPN's various platforms for the entire draft day, much to many other college programs' chagrin. He sort of brought Karl Anthony Towns along for the ride, and on one of the shows they talked a lot about that. How Towns talked about how motivated he was. How I think he said, I can't remember the order, but I think he said Davis kind of got the best of him in the first matchup, or it might have been vice versa, and it motivated the other to kind of come back hard in the other one. And so, yeah, I mean, it's clearly important to them, and I think maybe more so to Towns than anybody, because he's very image conscious, aware of how every single thing affects his sort of perception in the league, and I think he obviously wanted to come at the king, Anthony Davis, and do well. And I think he acquitted himself pretty well overall as a rookie, teenage rookie.
Yeah, amazing. As you said, none of those guys, because Davis didn't win Rookie of the Year, he was their best shot. And John Wall didn't win Rookie of the Year either, because Blake Griffin won it that year. He had sat out the year before and won it. So neither of those guys, despite having great years, Towns was the first of all those guys, which is probably something he brags about, I would guess.
Yes. I have no doubt, but humbly brags about it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because I know Anthony Davis, one of my favorite Anthony Davis stories that I heard this year was that they were, when they did that alumni game last summer, they played against the alumni from North Carolina, which was the first day on the job for me. I talked to Anthony Davis that day. But a story I had heard about him and that he confirmed is that they were doing shoot around that morning. They had a little mini practice and they pumped in the NCAA tournament song "One Shining Moment" into the arena, and Anthony Davis asked DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Bledsoe, "Am I the only one who knows what this song is?"
that's vicious. But yeah. It's it's the reason Anthony Davis may, you know, no matter who comes along, may always be, who is before him or who comes after him, may always be remembered more fondly than any of these one and done. He and Kid Gilchrist and the rest of those guys, because they actually managed to do both of Calipari's favorite things, which, you know, it's debatable what his true favorite order is, but, you know, NBA draft success and actually hanging a banner, they did both.
Yeah, that was a great, great team. Glad to kind of reminisce on it with sort of an eye toward the NBA, and I'm glad you could join us doing that. I'm excited. I get to watch these guys going forward. I can't wait to see Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns match up some more, but you will be seeing the next generation of guys, so that'll be fun as well. And thanks for joining us. Anything you want to plug, anything you want to tell people to check out at secountry.com?
No, just mainly check out the site. It's a great new site. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's sort of big online project, and they are investing heavily and hiring a lot of good people. And we're going to go and travel and do a lot of cool things and try to tell great stories about the league. I'll be covering it from a league-wide perspective in football season, and getting back to sort of my bread and butter, what I know the most about. Focusing only on Kentucky during basketball season. So kind of the best of both worlds for me, and should be a lot of fun.
All right. Hey, Kyle, thanks for joining me. It's been fun. I hope we haven't bored people to death with Kentucky talk, but I think we made it NBA-oriented enough to keep people's interest.
Hope so. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks. So that was Kyle Tucker, and again, check out his work at secountry.com. We will be back tomorrow, hopefully going to talk a little bit more in-depth about Terrence Jones with somebody who knows more about him as an NBA player than I do. So we'll get into some discussions about that. Might have some news, as I said, this week about signings. Again, as I get ready to post the podcast, that hasn't happened, but I expect that anytime now. So we still got a couple more weeks here in July where we're going to be doing daily podcasts. We've got a whole bunch still to talk about. I will be here doing that. I hope you will be too.